Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Hi, everyone. This is James and Dan. We are 2/4 of the hit UK podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. Every week we sit down behind some microphones and share with each other the best things we've found out over the last 7 days.
Yes. So, for instance, Dan, did you know that you cannot tie a knot in 4 dimensions?
I knew that's where I was going wrong. Interesting.
There are all sorts of reasons why, but we would go into them all on our podcast, along with loads of extra facts as well.
That's right. And if you want to check it out, No Such Thing as a Fish is available wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello and welcome to Alchemy 101, the show where we explore the many paths of transformation and aim to mine a few nuggets of gold that can support us in living in line with nature in a way that's true to our nature, even though sometimes that might feel counterintuitive, just like the nightingale, a bird that sings out in the dark. I'm JJ, also known as The Practical Alchemist, and I'm so pleased to have your company today for a show that's all about purpose and connection, and the connection both of these have to health. Later, we'll hear from Dr. Beau Kirkwood. He's a physician and author, and we'll be talking about purpose and the connection with mental health particularly. But first, some congratulations are in order. Well done to everybody who won a category in this year's UK Health Radio Awards, and thank you to everyone who voted. I was delighted to see that 3 guests on this show won a category. First of all, the Food for the Brain Foundation, who are doing such fabulous work in aiming to stem the tide of Alzheimer's and dementia. I have a particular interest in this because both of my parents had dementia. My father had Alzheimer's and vascular dementia. Now, the foundation's founder, Patrick Holford, came onto the show to tell us about how we can discover our dementia risk and how we can lessen that risk. And you can find out more about the foundation at foodforthebrain.org. Check out that show from the end of last year with Patrick. Meanwhile, I'm looking forward to having him come back to talk about his latest book, Upgrade Your Brain, Unlock Your Life's Full Potential. Another winner was the fabulous Myra Fordham, who took the prize in the Self-Awareness and Realization category. Myra is an Australian leader and coach who went from facing death to becoming a true winner in every sense. She was a guest on this show, but also on my show Hurt Less, Live More here on UK Health Radio with my dear friend and co-host, the late Dr. Mark Goulston. You can still listen to both shows on my show page, and you can find out more about Myra at myrafordham.com. And last but by no means least, I was delighted that Dr. Iski Britton won the Environment and Conservation category. Iski is the author of a wonderful book called Ebb and Flow, Connect with the Patterns and Power of Water. She's not only an author, but a surfer, a lifelong surfer, in fact, an artist, filmmaker, coach, and marine social scientist with a PhD in environment and society. She now channels her passion for the sea and surfing into social change. Here's an extract from the chat we had. I couldn't resist adding a little bit from her into this show. We'd been talking about the pollution in our seas and oceans and how we might strengthen our connection. Rather than feeling overwhelmed by plastic islands in faraway places, maybe just cleaning up our beaches at home would be a good place to start.
Yeah, I mean, that's a wonderful way to start. Because it's bringing people together and creating an awareness of things we use in our everyday lives and discovering them in a place maybe that they shouldn't be. But thinking about how did it end up there and what is the way we could even prevent it ever ending up in the ocean in the first place. And it's a wonderful way. We've carried out studies in my work and in Blue Health too, looking at how even those activities are also enhancing. The very act of doing that is an act of reciprocity. So it enhances our social well-being. It's a great way to kind of come together in groups. You might, you know, you could be a group of strangers, but because you're doing the shared activity on the beach, on the coast, of course, has this feel-good factor. There's that, even the act of taking part in it has the benefit for us. The scale of the problems may seem so overwhelming, which can make it even, can kind of numb us into inaction, which is the worst possible thing.
Yeah.
For me, I think the starting place is always, again, when I talk about reciprocity and connection and that intimacy with place. So it begins with wherever you are. You maybe, read about the scale of the problems on a global level, global scale. But with water, it's all the same. It's all connected. The drop of water that's, dripping out of your tap is going to be the water that's also in the global oceans.
Yeah.
So that for me offers a brilliant opportunity to start wherever we are, however great or small, with that question of, well, where is your water and how is it doing? And then from there, it's really about building up that kind of ocean literacy, that water literacy in our society again, which is simply about understanding how and why we're inextricably linked, the health of the ocean and our health. How much we depend on it and vice versa. But to be ocean literate also is about to become more fluent in the language of the ocean, the language of water. And by that, I mean, it's about listening to water again. What can we learn from it, being by it, spending time just sitting with it? So it's almost all these things we would do in any relationship of getting to know someone that we've just met, perhaps. But applying that to water in our lives is a wonderful way to start to restore that connection. And then, acting, I think, mindfully is really important. I loved in Christiana Figueres' book, The Future We Choose. So she was instrumental in getting the climate agreement at COP in Paris in 2015. I find it interesting that they argued for greater mindfulness in our approach to how we live. So learning to create a gap between ourselves, the world, and our reactions. So we're often, the way our societies and cultures are designed, increasingly we end up in this reactive mode where we're just, reacting to triggers and things that happen or get thrown our way. And we don't have a moment to breathe or to pause or to even take a one moment meditation, as it were. But how important that is then, because it allows us to actually make those connections between our thoughts and our actions and the wider world, which is also a really important part of the solution. So there's all those kinds of things. And then the more, I suppose, hands-on ways of getting involved in cleanups and so on.
But we can't get overwhelmed by seeing plastic islands in the middle of the ocean. You see lots of pictures of those on social media, and we might go, oh, that's terrible, and then feel completely disempowered, because what can you do about that? So it is about starting small, just looking at your own backyard.
Where you are. Yeah, I think so. And I came across a fascinating project I read about in the book, The River Listening Project, headed by Leah Barclay. Started in Australia, but there is a wonderful example again. So she actually uses a hydrophone to record the song of the rivers, as it were. And rivers that are most biodiverse and alive and free flowing and wild have this wonderful cacophony, or symphony, I should say, of sounds how the water moves, but everything that's living in the water that we can't hear beneath the surface. And I've never really thought about that when it comes to rivers before. And then she also records the sounds in rivers that have been dammed and polluted, and they're just silent. And so it's really striking. But she then also records rivers where there's been great kind of collective community initiatives to clean up the water and to care for the river again. And you can hear the sounds coming back. And perhaps it's a new song that the river makes. It will never be like the one before. But isn't that a wonderful example of, again, that power of renewal through connection, through restoring these connections?
Yeah, it's beautiful. Absolutely beautiful. It's the most relaxing thing. I'm not a fisherman, woman, person. I have, though, accompanied people up in the Highlands when they've been salmon fishing or fly fishing. And actually, the best thing is just sitting there and listening to the river, just listening to the water and maybe seeing a fish jump to catch a fly and hearing that sort of plop as it gets back into the water. And then maybe seeing a kingfisher or seeing some of the other birds around, maybe a dipper or, you know, and hearing them as well. It is as relaxing as something that I do most days here, nearly every day, and that's just listen to the waves on the sea. Every time I go to swim, which is virtually every day here, I'm going to go for a swim in a short while after this. Every day when I go for a swim, I listen to the waves. And no matter what the weather is like, it's almost like it takes me to another place of just sheer relaxation. And I'm minded of, you know, times when I've been on a Greek island, say, or somewhere very warm and exotic, when you're just lying there on the beach listening to the waves. And it reminds me that I don't have to be on a Greek island. I don't have to be anywhere. I can just be here in the UK and get the same effect. And isn't that wonderful?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And even more so how it's wonderful that we have this on our doorstep. I live here in Donegal on a beach called Rosnaula, and just literally the sea is across the road from where I live. But also how, because we are bodies of water, we can access these experiences wherever we are. And people often, it's one of the most common questions I get asked, sort of, how do I connect with water, with ocean, if I live inland, if I live in a city, and I talk about that in the book and different ways to do that. But even one really simple one, yet powerful, is taking that breath in, as I call it, the ocean breath, and making that connection with, you know, every second breath we take actually comes from the ocean. So phytoplankton, those tiny microscopic plants in the ocean, actually produce about 60% of the oxygen in the Earth's atmosphere.
Yeah.
It's remarkable to think that the ocean is breathing for us. And so it's a wonderful way then just to take that mindful few breaths. And even if it's just a couple of breaths in our day, as a way to honor our ebb and connect with the ocean wherever we are.
Oh, that's such a wonderful thought. And who really would think that when you're breathing in, you're breathing in the ocean? That's a fabulous fact to store away and just be mindful of as we go through our daily lives, wherever we are. Oh, Iski, thank you so much for coming onto the show and talking to me about this.
Oh, wonderful. Thank you. Lovely to talk about it with you, JJ.
You're welcome. Dr. Iski Britton there, and you can find out more about her at her website, iskibritton.com. That's EASKEYBRITTON.com. Healthy water in all its forms is such a prerequisite for a healthy life and body, and I definitely recommend a dive into her book, Ebb and Flow. For now, though, it's time for us to take a short break. I'll be back with a purpose right after these messages.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Hi, Hi everyone, this is James and Dan. We are two-fourths of the hit UK podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. Every week we sit down behind some microphones and share with each other the best things we've found out over the last 7 days.
Yes, so for instance, Dan, did you know that you cannot tie a knot in four dimensions?
I knew that's where I was going wrong. Interesting.
There are all sorts of reasons why, but we would go into them all on our podcast, along with loads of extra facts as well.
That's right. And if you want to check it out, No Such Thing as a Fish is available wherever you get your podcasts.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
And you're listening to Alchemy 101 with me, JJ, the Practical Alchemist. Well, you can definitely say that the three winners I mentioned before the break had a purpose in life, and they're achieving great things. Purpose is the subject of a book written by my special guest today, Dr. Bo Kirkwood, who's a medical doctor based in Texas in the USA. In fact, the book is called A Purpose-Driven God, which explores all the questions we've all asked at some point, like, who am I, why am I here, and where am I going? Is there a purpose to life, or are we just part of a lucky sequence of events? It's a very thorough book, I have to say. He even covers how water is essential for life and how it fits so perfectly into the life cycle, which kind of fits with Esky Britain there. I was curious as to his thoughts on why purpose is so important for a healthy life. So that was my first question to him.
Well, there's two views that you can have in life, two worldviews. That's a fancy word, but two worldviews. And everybody has a worldview, whether they articulate it or not, they really do. One is a worldview that is what I would refer to as natural materialism. And natural materialism is said that we're just a bunch of chemicals put together randomly and by chance, and that the entire universe came about randomly and by chance without any particular design in mind and without any particular purpose in mind. And then there is the theistic worldview, or the intelligent design worldview, and that looks at the universe and says, I see exquisite design within the universe that shouts purpose. There has to be a reason that all this came together, and that I'm not just a sum of all my chemicals or my atoms. And I do have purpose and I do have free will. Because if you take materialism to its logical conclusion, there cannot be any free will. Because if all I am are chemicals that react to one another, then I have no control over that. Therefore, I have no free will. And that is their logical conclusion. And therefore, as a result, materialism has no purpose. You're on the earth to live whatever days that you have on this earth. And if there is a purpose in the materialistic point of view or worldview, it is to have a good time, to eat, drink, and be merry, so to speak, as the Bible talks about. And just to have a good time, that's what the purpose is, which is really no purpose at all. On the other hand, if I believe that there is an intelligent design behind the universe, and that the universe is exquisitely designed, he built it with a purpose, and that purpose is for human beings to walk the earth, and he has given us a purpose, and our life then has meaning. And a meaningful life, a life that has purpose behind it, I believe is a much more satisfying life. And I believe without that, if I really live my life without any purpose at all, and I'm just here to take up space for a few short decades and then vanish and gone, that means I have no accountability for what I do. And I have no purpose, and I just don't see that as a very satisfying life. Now, the materialist would say, but from their point of view, it can be a satisfying life because I don't worry about the afterlife. So I'm just here to have fun, to do what I can, maybe do what I can for humanity. But when it's all over, I'm dead and I'm gone. But because I don't fear death, so to speak, like that, as some would say, I have a more meaningful life as a result. I don't find that to be a satisfying answer.
So, but the person who thinks that way and who maybe is doing stuff for humanity, they have a purpose. So isn't that good enough? And how does purpose impact us in terms of a healthy life? And you talk about a satisfying life. What about health and well-being?
If you believe that this is all there is, and why would you care about anything other than your own life? It becomes something that becomes very internal and very narcissistic, if you will, because you're only going to be caring about your own life because that's all you've got. I mentioned in my book a young man who went to the university who thought that he would go and find purpose in the sciences and the mathematics, and that somehow the university would help him define his purpose in life. He found out that that didn't happen. And as a result of that, it made his life even more sad. And as a result, he committed suicide over that. He was one looking for purpose and couldn't find it in the natural world and in the sciences. And the sciences really don't have answers for that. They don't have answers for purpose. But on the other hand, if I believe that I've been put on this earth for a reason, and I'm not just here by random chance, that God has a purpose for me, that is a satisfying life. It gives me purpose to help my fellow man. I have a reason now to help my fellow community and my planet that I live on. And I just think that is a much more satisfying view of life than to think that I'm just here taking up space.
So then are we saying that it's important for mental health to have some kind of purpose? And I want to talk about science and purpose in a moment, because you go into it in great depth in your book. But let's just talk a little bit more about mental health and purpose. Is what you're saying, we find it difficult to be healthy in terms of our mental well-being if we don't have any purpose, if we're just floating around aimlessly in life?
I think you do. I mean, I'm not saying that all materialists are unhappy people. No. I know a lot of materialists and they're happy people. But when I think about life, and maybe I think about it too much, I don't know. I just think that there is a hereafter. There is something that goes on besides my natural body. That's my belief. I have reasons for believing that. And as a result of that, I think there's going to be some sort of accountability for my life as well. And I want my life to have purpose, and I want my life to show that in other people as well. One of the reasons I became a physician was because one of the purposes I felt in my life was the need to help people. And what better way to do that than through the process of being a physician? Both help their physical lives and their mental lives as well. And I treated many, many people with psychiatric disorders, especially depression, which is extremely common in our society. And I believe one reason it's common in our society is, again, people are running around leading their lives without purpose. Now, most people don't think about that. They don't think about purpose. They really don't. You know, they don't get up in the morning and think, what is my purpose other than taking care of the things we need to take care of to lead our lives? They don't think about that. But for the people that do, to think that when it's all over and I'm dead and I'm gone, and there's nothing left of me, that may be satisfying for some people. But a lot of people have a lot of anxiety over that. And I don't believe I don't think it's a true reality. And so I think there is part of us, there's that spiritual part of us that yearns for a purpose. And by satisfying that purpose, we are much more healthy mentally and spiritually and have very satisfying lives as a result of that.
The
golden rule, I think, is applicable here. Treat other people as you would have yourself to be treated. You can word that in whatever language you want to. It's sort of a universal principle, but it's certainly spelled out in the Bible. And I think if we lead our lives that way, where we're going to treat other people the way we want to be treated, we will be happier and we will make other people happier too. And some of the problems that we see in our society, which are tremendous, unfortunately, come from people living lives that don't have that purpose, who see are very narcissistic and don't see a true purpose in life other than to take care of themselves.
Yeah, I can see that. I can see that. And you talk about some of the, we talk about the materialists and scientists, and we talk about people who have a spiritual leaning and a spiritual belief, and maybe not necessarily in the Bible or God, but who believe in some higher power, whatever that is, and believe that there is something more to life. But I noticed that you talk a little bit about how some of our most notable scientists throughout the ages also had a belief in a higher power, in God, in the spiritual. So, you know, what is the correlation then, do you think, between people who do something or make something of their lives? I mean, these are very learned men. What do you think is the correlation there?
Well, there's a fallacy, for one thing, that says that you can't believe in God and be a good scientist.
Right.
Well, that's just not true. It hasn't been, and it isn't now. A lot of good scientists believe in God, and I can name those people that are currently alive. But let's go back a little bit. Let's go back to someone like Isaac Newton, for example. Isaac Newton looked at the universe, and he saw mathematically a very logical universe that followed very precise mathematical equations. Why is that? It doesn't have to be. He then also saw that the universe followed very precise physiologic and physical characteristics, such as gravity and so forth. Doesn't have to be. And so he was a believer. He was a believer in God. He was a devout believer in God. And he thought the reason for that is there had to be a mind behind it. Johannes Kepler was of the same belief. Kepler, for our listeners, was, if they didn't know this already, was the one who had discovered the orbits of the planets. He was a tremendous mathematician. And he liked to refer to mathematics as the, quote, language of God. Well, why did he use that term? Because there's a logic behind mathematics. There doesn't have to be, but there is. And as a result of that, it points to a higher being. And so good science, and I could go on and on, James Clerk Maxwell and so forth, just real brilliant people that have walked this earth, that we are still living our lives through discoveries they made centuries ago, were devout believers in God. And yet they practiced very good science. And it made sense to them that there had to be a intelligent design behind all of this logic and all of these constants in the universe and all the what we like to refer to as the fine tuning of the universe. Our universe, as I'm sure you're aware, is exquisitely fine tuned. The materialists don't doubt that, by the way. No. They don't doubt the fine tuning. But if the speed of light isn't what it is, if the gravitational constant isn't what it is, on and on and on, the strong force, the weak force, all those things, if those things weren't exquisitely fine-tuned, we wouldn't be here. So what's the explanation for that? It could be all just random and we're lucky, or we're living in some sort of multi-universe, which for which there's no evidence for at all, or there could be some intelligent mind behind it. And so quite contrary to what most people believe, it doesn't take a materialist to be a good scientist. And good science is continuing to be done by people that believe in an intelligent design. And in fact, to me, the more discoveries we see in science, the more proof we have that there's an intelligence behind it all.
And then you believe that understanding that there is that intelligence behind it all, it gives us the impetus to find purpose, to move through life in a way which is contributing to our own development and others.
Absolutely. Now, I come from a Christian background. Some of our listeners may not be Christian, that's fine, but I logically, you know, people say Christians believe in Jesus Christ and they have a blind faith. My faith isn't blind. I look at the evidence. Who would be the most likely intelligent designer that we have postulated so far? And I believe that it happens to be the God of the Bible. and that he sent his son, Jesus Christ, on this earth to give proof of that. And so my belief then falls under that, and the feeling that I am to follow Jesus Christ and do his will. And if I do that, it's going to give me supreme purpose in life. And I think there's evidence for that. And I mentioned that in my book. I think the resurrection of Jesus Christ is the primary evidence for that.
Yes, Dr. Kirkwood writes a lot about that in his book, A Purpose-Driven God. And we'll be hearing more from him in just a few moments. But first, it's time for another short break. Back right after this.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Hi everyone, this is James and Dan. We are two-fourths of the hit UK podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. Every week we sit down behind some microphones and share with each other the best things we've found out over the last 7 days.
Yes, so for instance, Dan, did you know that you cannot tie a knot in four dimensions?
I knew that's where I was going wrong. Interesting.
There are all sorts of reasons why, but we would go into them all on our podcast, along with loads of extra facts as well.
That's right. And if you want to check it out, No Such Thing as a Fish is available wherever you get your podcasts.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
And you're listening to Alchemy 101 here on UK Health Radio, the world's number one talk health radio station. I'm JJ, the Practical Alchemist, and thank you for being with me today for some connection and purpose. So back to today's special guest, Dr. Beau Kirkwood. And I got to thinking about intelligent design, how the human body is such a wonderfully complex organism. Well, pretty much every living thing, really. So here's how we continued. Everything on Earth, living thing on Earth, is extraordinarily complex, actually, when you look at it. And so you do have to ask, well, how did that happen then?
Yes. We speak in the book about the carbon cycle, for example.
Yeah.
Something, again, we don't think about, but plants take in carbon dioxide and use water and light to produce carbohydrates. As a result of that, they release oxygen into the air. We as human beings take that oxygen that's released in the air and metabolize it. And then we release carbon dioxide, which then again, the plants take in to produce more carbohydrates. It's a cycle. Doesn't have to be that way, but it is. And if we didn't have that carbon cycle, and I know that's a real rudimentary explanation, but if we didn't have that, then we wouldn't have life. In my book, we could have talked about any number of organisms in the body. I chose the respiratory system and the cardiovascular system because they're so intertwined. One doesn't function without the other. And how did that come about just randomly and by chance? I see it much more likely to have come about by exquisite design.
Yes, because you talk a lot about evolution, for instance, you know, whether we can really explain such things through evolution, and why would a body evolve in such a way, or how could a body evolve in such a way through evolution? You talk about that at some length in the book.
Yeah, I do. And first of all, the big question is why life? Mm. Why is there life at all? Why would life want to begin? Now, Darwin did a very good job of explaining how a change or evolution occurs within species. And I don't know of any scientist that doesn't believe that. Species change. There's no doubt about that. What is not proven by Darwin, nor could he, because he didn't have the knowledge that we have now about the cell and so forth, he couldn't begin to say how life began. He postulated in some little pond where there might have been chemicals there and so forth. Mankind is still pondering that. How did life begin? For evolution to occur, it assumes life. Okay, natural selection and survival of the species assumes life. So that doesn't work in the beginnings of life. And there's many researchers that are doing origin of life research. And today, they haven't been successful at all in producing anything remotely that looks like life. But the fossil evidence does not support that kinds turn into different kinds. And the reason they don't support that, and it's in my book, but there's no transitional forms. The lack of transitional forms is significant. And there should be in the fossil records, millions of transitional forms from one species to another. We don't see that. So the fossil record doesn't support it. But change within species, microevolution is the word I like to use, or adaptation is a given. That occurs. But origin of life, there's no explanation for it.
No, exactly. Because whoever created life, who created them? Or what created them? I mean, you can go back forever and ever, can't you say? And then who created that thing that created that? And
yeah, that's Richard Dawkins' argument.
Yeah.
A very bright atheist who I've read a lot of his books. And he makes some valid points. But the assumption by the believer is that God has always existed. He transcends time, space, and matter. And he goes beyond that. So it's a question that can't be answered. No, can't say when God began because he had no beginning. And interestingly, Stephen Hawking, he didn't try to answer that. When you read his books and his findings, he says, for example, what happened before the Big Bang is beyond science. They have no explanation for it.
If you were to really think about that for too long, I think one's brain might explode. And that's not
very
healthy.
It might explode.
That is not.
It very well might explode. I agree with you.
Yeah, that is not very healthy. So, yeah, so we, in some ways then, maybe we've kind of, I don't know, but with all the mental health problems that we have at the moment, it's almost as if we've kind of devolved into this, into a place where, or a position where a lot of us have no purpose, we're struggling to find meaning, and then that really impacts our mental health. Whereas I guess in the past, there were so many other things that we would fill our lives with, which were more meaningful, that we didn't actually get these mental health issues, or did we?
Well, I think, We try to find the pleasure in life through materialistic things, and we gather things, we possess things, and so on, and we have quote unquote friends, and you know there's Facebook and there's all this social media, and we're trying to find satisfaction in that, and ultimately there is none without a meaning or purpose behind life itself, and I think that's what affects the mental health so much. The people think they're going to be satisfied when they, for example, obtain a lot of money or physical possessions. And when they get those things, some of the saddest people we have are those individuals that have those things.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't satisfy the spiritual part of man. It doesn't satisfy that part of us that's looking for a bigger scheme in things. And so when we start relying on those physical things to satisfy us, that gets us in trouble, and I think it does lead to very bad, poor mental health. The happiest people on earth should be the ones that are living their lives with purpose, and I find that to be true.
Yeah.
When they find that purpose, and there's multiple purposes. I mean, the ultimate purpose in my book, I believe, is to serve God. But there's other purposes too. And like I said, my particular purpose was to become a physician. Other people's purposes may be to do other things, not necessarily directly related to helping their fellow man, but ultimately to helping their fellow man. And if we all did that, it'd be a much happier place.
And as a physician, if people were to come to you who are suffering from mental health issues or other health issues, how might you encourage them to find their purpose?
Well, in my opinion, it would be look to God. Okay, get back into His Word and see what His Word says. It's in Jeremiah it says it's not in man to direct our own steps. Okay. It's not in mankind to direct our own steps. Well, who then is to direct them? It comes from God. And when we get and turn back to God and put our lives under God, in this case, Jesus Christ, then we become happier people.
Right.
We realize that there's a being that's higher than me, and that he loved me so much that he sent his own son to come to this earth to die for me, for us. And as a result of that, we have purpose in following him.
And if you're not somebody who follows the Christian faith and is drawn to the Christian religion and the concept of God in the Christian religion, but presumably anybody with, you know, it would work for anybody who's looking to a higher power.
I would leave that to them.
Yeah.
That, you know, I'm not going to say that a Buddhist or someone who follows Confucius or whatever, Hindu, whatever, can't have meaning in life through their beliefs and find purpose in their lives. My ultimate belief is in Jesus Christ, because he said, no one comes to the Father except by me.
Yeah.
Now, it's my duty as a Christian to try to support that belief. And I do that, I think, a little bit in my book. My book is not just a Christian book, but the last three chapters of the book, certainly I give my reason for my belief. The Apostle Peter says that as a Christian, and this only makes sense, and I believe this would apply to the Buddhist and the Hindu as well, you need to be able to give a reason for what you believe. And that's what Peter said. Be ready to answer those who ask you, why do you believe what you believe? If you can't answer that as a Christian, I think you've got an issue. You need to be able to answer that. I would ask the same thing to the Buddhist or the Hindu or the Muslim or whatever. Why do you believe what you believe? Then we could have a religious discussion about that, those sort of things. But the higher purpose that says that I need to treat not only, you know, the thing that makes Christianity unique, I point this out, that a lot of religions have the golden rule, but Jesus said, we are to love who? Our enemies. That's a hard one.
Mm.
That's difficult. I am not only to love, what value is it if I just love those who love me? There's no value to that, really. I need to love those who don't love me. I need to love those who actually, Jesus said, hate me. And when you can do that, I think you can have some satisfaction in life. You can understand why we're put on this earth.
Yeah. And it's a tough one. That's a tough one. But also forgiveness, forgiving people. That's a very important thing as well. And
to be able to forgive. Yes, we have to have a spirit within us that is willing to forgive.
Yeah,
that's number one. And some people say, I'm not going to forgive that person unless they come up to me and apologize. And until then, I'm going to hold a grudge. And you talk about bad mental health. when you start holding grudges and not letting go of things, that's what can get you in trouble mentally. And we all struggle with that. I need to have a spirit that says, I've already forgiven that individual even before they have come to me and ask for my forgiveness or have offered me an apology, because many times they're not going to. And so if we walk around life then holding that kind of grudge, holding that feeling towards another individual, that affects me individually.
Absolutely.
And it can really lead to some very serious mental illness. We have to be able to let go of things.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think that's a great place to end this. But I would ask before we leave you, your book is called A Purpose-Driven God. And just tell us where people can lay their hands on it and read it. It is an extremely thorough book, actually, looking at purpose. Yeah, I really enjoyed it. It wasn't what I expected it to be, but I did enjoy it very much. And so if anybody wants to buy that, where do they get it? And also, where can people find out more about you?
They can find out about me just by going to YouTube. I do not have websites. I'm not a very I'm technically challenged. Let's put it that way. But as far as learning about me, you can go to YouTube. I have some YouTube videos, quite a few, as a matter of fact, that discuss the topics we've just kind of touched the surface on today. As far as my book is concerned, really it's Amazon.com, BarnesandNobles.com. There's any number of websites. If you Google my name and or the name of the book, you're going to find a place to buy it. So it's easy enough to get.
Brilliant. Well, thank you so much for speaking with me today. And it's fascinating. And yeah, it's an aspect of health that I think a lot of us don't pay too much attention to. But thank you very much for shining a spotlight on that.
And
you know, you're welcome. And thank you so much. And all the best with the book and all the work that you do.
Okay, thank you.
Dr. Bo Kirkwood there. His book, A Purpose-Driven God, is a forensic examination of the facts around whether we're here by purpose or chance. And I really enjoyed this interview, hearing his conclusions and beliefs. Personally, I don't have any definitive answers to how or why we're here. And when I think of the question, what's the answer to life, the universe and everything, my mind always returns to The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy by Douglas Adams. According to Deep Thought, the answer's 42. Now, that might turn out to be very profound in reality, but it's obviously just my way of avoiding a brain explosion, which, as I said, isn't very healthy. And on that note, we're coming to the end of the show. Do check out my YouTube channel, Alternatively Speaking, and if you want to find out more about me, then head over to my website at thepracticalalchemist.uk. You can drop me a line there or follow me on social media. You'll find all the links there too. And if the energy clearing work I do interests you, go to safehavenhealing.uk. And if you're hungry for more health information, why not check out our Health Triangle magazine? You'll find the link to that on the UK Health Radio homepage. For now, though, I want to thank you for listening. I hope that you found this interesting, helpful, enjoyable, all of those things. And if you did, do join me next time for more practical alchemy and more fabulous guests. Until then, it's goodbye from me and that nightingale.
This is James and Dan. We are two-fourths of the Hit UK podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. Every week we sit down behind some microphones and share with each other the best things we've found out over the last 7 days.
Yes. So, for instance, Dan, did you know that you cannot tie a knot in four dimensions?
I knew that's where I was going wrong. Interesting.
There are all sorts of reasons why, but we would go into them all on our podcast, along with loads of extra facts as well.
That's right. And if you want to check it out, No Such Thing as a Fish is available wherever you get your podcasts.